On page 93, or 94, it's chapter 23. Okay, in chapter 23, the Alter Rebbe talks about the importance of doing mitzvahs and introduces a statement, which has been said before, that the 248 limbs of the body, 248 mitzvahs of the 248
limbs
of the king. 248 mitzvahs of 248 limbs. Okay. Now, if you remember your 7th grade health or biology science class, we were told that there are 206 bones in the body. So there's a description there of 42 bones.
Yes.
Okay. So how is it? How are they counted according to the Mishnah? So there's a Mishnah in Oholos. It's in the first parak, Mishnah Ches. It says, and the translation is mine, I'm going to sight read it, there are 248 limbs of a person, 30 in the foot. A lot of bones in your foot. Okay. And 6 on each finger. 10 in the coursal, which a that's like the knee, 2 in the thigh, 5 coursal must not be a knee because our kuvia is 5 in the knee, 1 in the thigh, you got 2 in the shin and 1 in the thigh, 3 in the catalis, which is like the pelvis, 11, what do you call it, vertebrae, 30 in the hand, 6 in each finger. So before when he said finger, he meant toe. 2 in the neck, must be more than that in the neck. 's the first part of the arm, excuse me, the forearm, and 2 in the, and I guess the other part of the arm. He says 1 in the top part of the arm, 4 in the shoulder, and me'av echad mizeh, and that's only on one side, so that's 101 on the right side, if you just counted those. And 101 on the other. I didn't go like 30 and then this much and that much, but it's 101 on one side and it's 101 on the other. So there you have 202. Ushmeina esra chulius b'shedra. You have 18 in the spine. What did you say before? So less, excuse me, I translated it wrong. 11 ribs. And 18 vertebrae. 9 in the head. 8 in the neck and 6 in the chest cavity and chamisha benekavav. Who achazam ibnei hakanah nekavav habeitzim vigidei ha'ema. And then there is 8 in the lower pelvis, and I'm using that euphemistically. Uh-huh. Okay, so there you have a list of 248. Okay, the difference is that I guess maybe this that if you ask a podiatrist how many bones there are in a foot, I don't think he's going to tell you that there are 30. I think they knock it way down. I think they say that there's like 12 bones. So if you call it a segment, might be considered a whole bone according to Torah, as far as, because this comes up as far as if you're in an underneath a roof with a bone of a dead person. So if it's a whole bone, you are tummy.
Oh, really? If it's a piece of a bone, you're not.
If it's a piece of a bone, you're not.
Really?
There has to be at that point. It has to be like bigger than a what do you call it? An adasha, lentil size, or something like that. There's all different parameters for it. But if it's a whole bone,
an entire bone,
so then you're tummy.
You're tummy.
Okay.
Interesting.
So. With that, so this is in case that you wanted to know how it is that we mashlim, how we figure out the 248 as opposed to the 206. So now, that's just a side point, but it's very interesting that the Mishnah counts those. So in Kol Hanal,
so there's no morticians in among Jews.
Sure, there are people who take care of dead bodies. They call them a Chevra Kedisha.
Of course, but then, yeah, of course they are. Duh, how stupid of me.
Right, but a person, a member of the Chevra Kedisha, would have some serious problems, like around Pesach time.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, you have to go a week before, take a week off from work and get purified before he was able to go into the temple.
Right.
Or what happens if somebody dies there of Pesach? Right. Well, tough.
Well, not just that. What if somebody dies during the week before?
Right. Exactly. So you have Pesach Sheni.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. But you got a guy whose business it is. He's a member of the Chevra Kedisha. He's doing burials every day.
Yeah.
So this guy's not going into the base of Mikdash.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly.
You know, except maybe for his summer vacation.
Yeah.
You know, so.
Indeed, yes.
So.
Yeah.
So with all this, this whole idea of concept that we talked before about being unified with the infiniteness of Hashem, you and Vivar Haiti Vitoises Beer will understand by first giving a greater explanation, more clarity, Masha Amr B'Zohar, that which it says in the Zohar, D'Araisu Ukut Shebrichu Kulei Chad. It says there that the Torah and Hashem are all one. Okay, let's stop there at that sentence first. That what does that mean? We said before in chapter 4 and chapter 5 that the Torah is Chachmasei v'Ritzayner shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's the will and wisdom of Hashem. And being that it is the will and wisdom of Hashem, so it says any attribute of Hashem, an attribute of Hashem is like a facet that it doesn't add or take anything away from Hashem, but is part and parcel of Hashem, and only defines Hashem in the world of Atzilus. Because in the world of Atzilus, we say Ihu v'chayehu chad, Ihu v'garmehu chad, Hashem and the light, the 10 lights that go into the kelim are one, and Hashem with the 10 kelim are one, with the 10 vessels. Because the world of Atzilus is supposed to convey, as the word of translation, one of the translations of the word Atzilus is the emanation, it's supposed to convey this emanated, user-friendly, godly force. So the Torah, as it is manifest in this world, and the Torah, we're going to say, is the essential wisdom of Hashem. How it's manifest is in Chochma of Atzilus. And then through there, it goes through the Seder Histalshalus, through the whole creation process, until it is manifest in such that you have a Gemara, which is talking about if an ox gores a cow and they find a dead embryo next to it, who has to pay for the embryo? It's a very famous Gemara, Sharsha Nagah HaSaparas, like one of the first Gemaras that little kids learn.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so in Atzilus, not as talking about a cow or an ox or goring or paying.
Mm-hmm.
Those things are just as they're manifest in this world so that we can get some kind of inkling as to what is the will and wisdom of Hashem.
Mm-hmm.
Because for us, living in a three-dimensional world, we can't say, oh, I understand this unless it's put into three-dimensional terms.
Right.
Because that's the difference between learning Gemara and learning Chassidus. I don't know if we've ever explained this before. When he talks about learning Gemara, you could say, I understand this. I got it.
Mm-hmm.
But you don't really understand, we don't really understand what's behind it. What's it talking about? Mm-hmm. The famous example that the previous Rebbe gives is in the first Mishnah in Baba Metzia, I can't even shake that, you know, that two people are coming to Beis Din and they're holding onto a talis. And this one says it's all mine, and this one says it's all mine. And so they make each one take an oath that they have not less than half, and they divide it. So we understand it. That's very simple. Two guys found a talis, and they come into court, and each one wants it. So we say, okay, listen, let's be nice about things, and let's divide the thing.
Perfect.
Okay, very simple. Okay, we know what to do. A, B, C. Okay? Comes along to Friedrich Rebbe and says, a neshama comes up to Shemayim. And there are two neshamas up there already. And each one grabs onto this neshama and says, any mitzvah that this neshama has come done in its lifetime, are in my merit because I was the one who influenced this person to do mitzvahs. And the other neshama comes and says, no, any mitzvahs that this person does are in my merit that I influenced them to do mitzvahs. So they come before the Beis Din Shalmaila, and the Beis Din Shalmaila administers an oath that they're not less than half, and they divide the merits between these two neshamas of what is the mitzvahs that this person did. And even that's an allegory, because if you're talking about neshamas, grabbing onto neshamas like this, it sounds really pretty trite the way that it's all explained when you think about it. But neshamas are in Madar HaBriya. They're living in the world of creation. So how's that going to be explained in Atzilus?
Right.
You know, you have different things going on with a chesed, with a gevurah, you know, and it comes out with a teferis. So that's sort of like solves the problems over there. So all of this is talking about starts of, we're manifest with two people grabbing onto a cow. Or two people grabbing onto a talus.
Talus, right.
When we're learning chesedus, so what are we learning about? The raisu akut shebrichu kol echad. As much as I'm going to explain, however much I know about a Kodesh Baruch Hu, and however much I'm going to explain about the Torah, and how much I can explain about the word chad, we're still not getting anywhere close to what it means.
Right.
Because we're talking ethereal concepts, we're talking about non-dimensional concepts, and the best that I can do is explain these concepts in dimensional ways.
Right.
So, bottom line is that I can never ever know, at least in our present physics, anything that this stuff is talking about. So if I can never really know what it's talking about, so what am I learning it for?
Exactly, why are we wasting our time?
For that, so okay, good. So there's Inyan HaShalteris of Hasidus, which is called the essence of Hasidus, which is translated into English. There's a cracker job. It's one of the better English translations done by Sarah Shandel Handelman. And I wish she would have translated other stuff because she did such a good job on that one. That so the Rebbe explains, well, what do you need for Hasidus for? And he says right out, the purpose of Hasidus is not to understand Kabbalah.
No.
Mm-hmm. Right up. This is not this is not Rashi on Kabbalah. That's not why we learn Hasidus. Mm-hmm. Okay? The Baal Shem Tov, when he instituted and formalized Hasidic philosophy, what did he want to do? Is he wanted to aliven and waken up the Yiddish and Neshamas. And if it took a Kabbalistic concept, okay, so he threw in a Kabbalistic concept at all. But the main purpose of Hasidus was to enliven all parts of the Torah. Mm. Okay, this is one of these things I strongly recommend, is the reading of the essence of Hasidus. And if you have questions, you can ask them to me. And I've taught it, I don't know, half a dozen times, maybe more.
Okay.
But the footnotes at the bottom are very good. Even. So... So, but what's so? He explains it over there at great length. That the purpose of Hasidus is to enliven every aspect of the Torah, but it also says that Hasidus is Mashiach Saha. Because Mashiach is going to come, he says he's going to teach a new Torah. Mm-hmm. Who's it going to be new to? Not the Hasidim. Because when Mashiach is going to come, people who don't learn Hasidus are going to say, "Gewaltig! Such wonderful things I'm hearing for the first time in my life." Hasidim are going to say, "Oh, that's what they were talking about." So, better to get like the idea first and then have like, yeah, okay, now. So we have a Kadosh Baruch Hu, and we have a Torah, and we have a unity, and whatever it is that all of those things mean. Okay, what do they mean? You have a Kadosh Baruch Hu is referring to the Mashpia aspect of Hashem, that aspect of Hashem which influences the world. It's called the masculine aspect of Hashem. That's why it's called a Kadosh Baruch Hu, not a Kadusha Bracha Hi. Okay? Kadosh Baruch Hu. Okay, or Kadusha Baruch Hi. Well, In some neighborhoods it is Barakhi, but we're not going to talk about them.
We're not going to go
there.
So,
the...
Depends on what part of Brooklyn you're
in. Yes, what part of Brooklyn you're from.
Yes.
So, the... So this is the aspect of Hashem is giver. Hmm. This is the part that says, I want godliness to come into the world.
Hmm.
Okay? And the Torah is the will and wisdom of Hashem. If you're putting in spheres, you're putting into geography, so Kadosh Baruch Hu are the midos of Hashem. Kindness, severity, etc.
Mm-hmm.
And the Torah, we said before, the will and wisdom of Hashem.
Okay.
So we're saying that the conveyance of Hashem's will and wisdom down here, it says is chad. It's one thing. It's not that you have God's intellect and God's emotion, and that God's emotion is trying to convey God's intellect. Okay? That's already too disjointed.
Yeah, that's a little poor, yeah.
What we have is one entity, because Hashem is indivisible, not under God, but indivisible within God.
Right.
You can't divide God. So that conveyance of intellect and desire through the creation process comes out in such a way that we should be able to appreciate it. That's what the term Doraisa Kusha Brichu Kul Echad. The Torah and Hashem is one.
Mm.
Okay, Hashem is doing us a favor. Okay, so now what's the ramifications of Hashem and the Torah are all one? So it's explained with Tikkunim. Tikkunim appears to Ramach Pekudin Inin Ramach Evorin de Malka. As we said before, when we preface the chapter, the 248 commandments, the positive commandments, are the 248 limbs of the king. What's the difference now that he said before in chapter 5? That the Torah, when you're talking Torah and learning Torah, so that's something which is internalized. So we use all kinds of examples for the Torah. And most of the examples that we give for the Torah are food, bread, water, wine, oil, milk.
Mm.
These are all examples for what the Torah is to what it does in our neshama.
Right.
So I tell people that the Torah is like a vitamin T. You know, you got to have Torah, you got to have your vitamins every day, you got to have your Torah every day. Okay? Because it's internalized your intellect with Hashem's intellect. Okay? And so that's what learning Torah is. What are the mitzvahs? The mitzvahs are what Hashem wants. Want compared to intellect, even though we said before that the Torah is the will and wisdom of Hashem, which means that it is the makif, the superficial revelation of Hashem. A superficial, I'm not saying that it's a secondary or tertiary. It doesn't have that negative connotation that the word superficial has, but it just means that it's not contained in an inner manner. So in the Torah, you have both. You have this expression of Hashem's ratzon, that is makif, that it is encompassing totally. And then it is also internalized because it's the will of Hashem as well. That's why it says specifically in the Zohar, the will and wisdom of Hashem. So when we say limb, so limb means extension of. Okay? Like, meaning that whatever purpose, whatever these external limbs serves, the mitzvahs serve the same purpose for Hashem. Okay? I would love to see a comprehensive list of what mitzvah corresponds to what body part. You have 248 mitzvahs,
yeah, yeah, yeah.
248 limbs,
mm.
But no one ever sat down and said, some of them you say you do tzedakah with your hand. But we just said there are 30 bones in your hand. Okay? So that's like, if that's the case, then there should be 30 mitzvahs you're doing with your hand.
Right.
Okay? And so what mitzvah are you doing with your elbow? You know?
Yes.
So, Right, exactly. Okay, or that fourth vertebrae.
Yeah.
The fourth cervical vertebrae.
Yes.
Vertebra. What are you doing with that one?
Or one of the third bones, one of the three bones on the shoulder.
Yeah. What are you doing there over here? No one ever drew up a list.
Mm-hmm. Or at least none of them were aware.
So that each mitzvah is an extension. And you could use the paradigm that by doing a mitzvah, you're, so to speak, shaking hands with God. Well, you have all the words that mitzvah means. A connection. And so you're connecting yourself to Hashem. So the only way in which you're able to connect to Hashem is only because Hashem is extending himself.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
That's why it says, I think we mentioned this not too long ago, that if you want to know what Hashem wants, where are you going to find what Hashem wants? The answer is in Kitzur Shulchan Aruch. You want to know what Hashem wants? Open up a Kitzur Shulchan Aruch. Could even be the one volume in English.
Right.
And you'll start there. The first thing Hashem wants us to do is to get out of bed.
Right.
That's the first thing.
There you go.
Right.
Okay, it goes all the way through the whole entire thing till you get to Hashem wants this guy to get buried.
To go to bed.
Yes, yes. Okay.
Permanently.
Yeah. So that compendium conveys basically what a Jew needs to get through the course of his lifetime, mm-hmm. in a way that he is doing what Hashem wants.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. This is a. A disclaimer, this class is in any way, shape, or form paid for or sponsored by the publishers of the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch.
Indeed.
So. Okay, Lefisha Hamitzis Heim Pnimius Ratzin Ha'elyin V'chefzei Ha'amiti Ha'malubish B'chol Ha'olam Ha'elyin V'tachtein L'achiyesim. Because it is that the mitzvahs are an expression of Hashem's inner will and his true desires, which is enclosed in all of the upper and lower worlds in order to liven them. Okay? It says, Haniach HaKadosh Baruch Hu Es Ha'olamos Elyonim U'manach, I think it's Shemai Ha'olam Hazeh. Hashem left over all the upper worlds of creation and put his name on this world.
Hmm.
Why? Because it says, Hayol, I should see if I can remember the Lashon over here, Olehem Yiridas Panav Yisbarach, because all those other worlds up there are considered for Hashem a Yirida.
Hmm.
They're a descent. They're an embarrassment, you might say.
Hmm.
The manifestation of Hashem, even in the world of Atzilus, the Alter Rebbe says it's just a ha'ara. It's just a ray. And how much of a ray is it? However much of a ray it is, it's still very little compared to where it's coming from.
Infinitely small.
So, and what is there in order to keep those worlds in existence from Atzilus all the way down to Olam Ha'asiyah HaRuchni, from the highest realm all the way down to the lowest spiritual realm? It takes a bit of godliness.
Yeah.
But this physical world, this is the stopping point. We are the reason why the world was created, why the whole creation process took place, is for this physical world. Meaning to say that the creation process wasn't started, that there should be an Atzilus or Neshamas or Malachim or whatever else it was. The purpose of creation is for Jews to do mitzvahs in this world. That was Hashem's original thought. Way back before the first creation, the first step in creation, before the first tzimtzum, the first contraction. So Hashem said, you know, this is brought in the statement, B'mi nishmach b'nishma sehem shel tzaddikim. With whom did Hashem take counsel? With the souls of the righteous. What does that mean? That even prior to creation, before there's even such a thing called a neshama, Hashem said, so to speak, that we've got neshamas, We put them in a physical world. We give them a couple of commandments. We see what happens. You know what? I like it. Two thumbs up. Because the impetus in the creating of the world is because Hashem wants it. Why does anybody want anything?
Because.
Nope. Better answer.
We want because of our makeup. He wants only because it's what he wants.
Nope. We're patterned after Hashem.
Okay, go.
Why do we want anything? Now I get you off the hook so fast. Got to spend at least 10 seconds. Why does a person want anything? Okay. Saul, did you ever want anything?
Sure.
Okay. Why did you want it?
Because it would benefit me.
Exactly. The whole reason why people want anything is because the pleasure it will bring them.
That's it. Wait, those are two different things. I said benefit, you said pleasure.
Benefit, pleasure, same deal.
No.
As far as I'm concerned.
We're not going to argue on English syntax. All right, fine. Fair enough.
Okay, I know what he meant.
Okay, fair enough.
Okay.
Fair enough.
So the world was created because Hashem said, I'm going to really enjoy this. This is going to hit right up to my most inner sublime levels of divine pleasure. Okay? So, is that the essential divine pleasure expressed even in the world of Atzilus? In the world of emanation? Where you have divine attributes? No, it's not.
No.
Where is it expressed? Specifically in this world, when a neshama in a body takes a physically created thing and does a mitzvah for it, then Hashem says, yes, all worthwhile. Mm-hmm. Those other worlds are called the Yerida for Hashem. They're a descent. They're an embarrassment. They're a chump change. The world was not created. Why are they there then? It says in Pirkei Avos in chapter 5, right at the beginning, that the world was created in 10 utterances, V'haloi b'maymer echad yachol hiborim, that Hashem could have created them all in one, which means that Hashem, had Hashem wanted to, could have bypassed his whole business of creation, and could have just said, instead of saying, let there be light, and let there be a firmament, and let there be dry land in the one place, and the water in the other place, and stars in the sky, and this and that, and etc., and finally let us make man, Hashem could have said, let's have a creation. Ta-dam! There would have been fartik. Okay, Hashem could have done that. But it says that Hashem did not do that. Hashem created the world through a process in order that we should be able to sit here and talk about it. Just the very fact that we're able to discuss levels in creation, and however much we're going to understand it, refines our intellect and refines, therefore, our character. So Hashem did us a favor by creating the world through a process. Because if Hashem would have just said, okay, let there be creation, that doesn't make a very good story. It's sort of like, it wasn't, now it is. Okay, that's all we'd be able to say. Oh, it wasn't, now it is.
Right. Doesn't give us a path.
It's like this, we can have something how to, like, at least to refine ourselves a bit. And true is also with the prophets, that every prophet received their prophecy on whatever level of spiritual attainment they had achieved. So like a Moshe, for example, who was a natural, he was sitting up, it talks about in Agarish HaKadosh, he was in Chochmah and Bina of Briyas, it's manifest in Netzach and Hayd, you know, so of Atzilus. So he's the highest prophet. And we put some spiritual geography. Mm-hmm. But even a prophet like Tzefanya or Avadia, who are put it in the back of the book,
right,
and only have like a book which is only just a couple chapters long,
mm-hmm,
still a whole lot better than anybody I know.
Sure.
Okay, so they God talked to them. They said, God said, and God did said. We're not talking like those people who stand in the bus station, you know. Okay?
Yes.
So, the mitzvahs are the inner expression of Hashem's true desire. So what happens now, since, it's sort of like you say, don't use the word path. Mm. Okay, so Hashem has this creation process involving all these paths. Mm. The beginning point is Hashem. The final result is this physical world. So when a Jew does a mitzvah involving specifically a physical thing, he puts on a pair of tefillin or even refrains from eating a pig. So we'll talk about negative commandments in the next chapter, so it's not fair to bring it in. A woman lights a Shabbos candle. They hear the sound of a shofar. Whatever the physical mitzvah may entail. So what happens now is there was a whole process bringing that physical thing into existence from the potential to the actual. We're going to use the return path of how the creation, that thing was created, to elevate it to a higher source. And he talks about this in, he already talked about it at the end, just very briefly, at the end of chapter 16, and later on in the in the 40s, when talk about doing mitzvahs with love and fear. Mm. Because when a person does a mitzvah, they're elevating the thing that they're using. It's now become a not just a vehicle of holiness, it's become holy. And how did it get raised up from the state of mundane or even profane, as the case may be, depending on what the thing is? Is because we redirected the chayas that's coming to it, we put a U-turn on it back. We put a return sticker on it. So that it's elevated back to its source. Mm-hmm. Back to the realm of holiness, we're talking from pre-creation. Okay, the difference between something which is holy and something which is not was alluded to also in the earlier part of the Tanya, that the holiness conveys godliness. Something which is holy, what makes it holy? It's conveying godliness.
Oh, that's right.
There's already people, when they see it, they have a certain reverence for it. Okay, if a copy of Shakespeare falls on the floor, no one's going to bend down and kiss it.
No.
If a chumash falls on the floor, there's already that, excuse me, there's that reverence and respect. All is just a book. If you were to put Shakespeare and the Bible both under paired microscopes, you'd see exactly the same thing. Abdul. But the difference is obvious. The differences are obvious because what do you get out of Shakespeare and what do you get out of the Bible?
Right.
Out of the Bible you get the expression of godliness in this physical world. Okay? And I'm not going to say what you get out of Shakespeare besides confused. Okay?
It's a wonderful soap opera.
Yeah.
Not godliness.
Ki kol chayesen v'shef and tali b'maisa hamitzvah shol tachteinim kineida. Because, this is something a very, very important thing to understand also. It's the ultimate in guilt trips. Mm. The entire creation, we said, is created for what? For us to do mitzvahs. Mm. Okay. What does that mean then? We have this obligation to keep the world in existence. When a person, let's back up. Hashem created a physical thing. The way in which that physical thing was created was through this whole pattern of Seder Histalshus, through the this whole creation process. And the person uses it. Okay, what does that do? Is that elevates not just the physical thing, but the process that it took to bring that physical thing into existence.
Right. All the way up the chain.
All the way up back to before the first Tzimtzum.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So that we have a tremendous responsibility. Because everything that that comes into our possession, we have the obligation of elevating it to its source. That's a tremendous responsibility on us. There's a story, maybe I told this story not too long ago, a couple of weeks ago maybe. I know I told it somewhere a couple of weeks ago. As a lady came to a certain big rabbi, and I've heard this story involving the Tzemach Tzedek and Yisrael Salant and the Chafetz Chaim, and probably about three or four other rabbis.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, who was the proponent. which leads me to believe that it probably never happened.
Yeah, it's more legend than.
Okay, because everybody's saying, oh, it's happened to, with our Rebbe.
You're right.
Lady comes to the rabbi with a chicken, and he's stumped. He's never seen a question like this before. And he just doesn't know what to do with it. And he's spending hours trying to determine if this chicken is kosher. So his masharsh, his secretary, said to him, it's only a chicken. Why don't you just tell her it's treif? And she'll go buy another one. It's a big deal. It's only a chicken. So the Rebbe said, when I come up to Shemayim, I don't want to be accosted by this chicken with a complaint, why didn't you pronounce me kosher?
Right.
So we have this tremendous responsibility of utilizing the world and making it kadosh, as the case may be. That's why, for example, that vows of abstaining from various foods, vegetarianism and macro and other things like this, you know, so are not condoned. Because who else is going to purify the godliness in a cow? If this cow is in your possession, then you have the responsibility of purifying it. That's why God put it into your responsibility. These are your things that you have to elevate.
Yes.
And if you have it, you have to do it, because I can't do your stuff. Any questions, though?
I'll say, to that end, when I first started doing the mashgiach work at the caterer, the other mashgiach, he was saying, you know, you gotta be careful doing these things. He said, if somebody eats a bug, throw it there.
Right.
You know, and it's like, think about it, like, yeah, it is. You know, I mean, you do your best at the end of the day.
Right.
But still, you have to be careful about it.
Yep. Okay, because by doing, the thing is that why are we here? We're just little pleasure grains for Hashem. Not even pods. I was going to say pleasure pods, but we're smaller than that. We're just little grains of potential pleasure for God. Okay? I'm making this up myself. We're sort of like God's ecstasy. Don't quote me on that one.
Thank you.
Okay. No. Because why? Because when we do a mitzvah, where does it go? It goes to the very highest levels of spiritual pleasure.
Yes.
To the level it's called Bala Ratzon. They have this, not to the level of will, but a level of the one whose will it is, which is even higher.
Right.
Okay, or a level of Tainig Poshut, which means a pleasure which is not dependent on any outer influences. It's not, why are you doing this? I don't know. I like to do it. Okay, there's no intellect involved. It's an essential expression. So these mitzvahs that we're doing are an essential expression. Okay, and therefore, that's why it's able that we are able to turn that energy which is coming in and to cause, well, Hashem says it's worth it creating the world for such a thing. So what does it come out now? That the physical action that a person is doing is the container for the most sublime level of wisdom. Mm-hmm. When you throw a nickel in a pushka, it's not a very lot of money, 5 cents. When you throw a nickel into a pushka, it's not that you're just throwing a nickel in a pushka. This is tzedakah keneged kulam. Okay, giving charity is ways equal to all the commandments. Why? Because when you're giving tzedakah, You're using your whole body. Because what do you have to do to give tzedakah? You have to be able to make money. And if you're making money, that means that you're using your whole body to make money. And how much money are you making? You're making 100%. And what are you going to do with that 100%? You're going to take off 10 or 20%. If you didn't make 100%, you couldn't take off 20%. It has to be 20% of what? I didn't make any money today, but I'm still going to take 20% off. That's not a whole lot.
Exactly.
Okay?
Yes.
So you have to have the other 4/5 in order to have the 1/5. So by giving tzedakah, you're elevating all the work that you did, plus the other 4/5 of the money that you didn't give to charity also gets elevated, because you couldn't give the 1/5 unless you had 4 other fifths to make it 5/5. Mm-hmm. Okay, so thereby giving this nickel, so you're giving of who you essentially are away. Mm-hmm. That's why tzedakah is considered such an important mitzvah. Okay? And this act of doing this mitzvah draws down the light and life of Hashem's will and encloses itself into the world. That's why it's called the limbs of a king. Like, for example, you have your arms and your legs and etc. that they do whatever you tell them, because they're nullified in their existence to the soul which is enlivening them. As soon as you take the soul out of the body, the body doesn't move anymore. It's got nothing, no impetus for it to move. It goes back to being the same mud pie that it started out as. Okay, but when it's got a soul, and it relates to the soul, and the soul is able to push it and move it and muchizich and etc., etc., so then the body's able to move. And it's not that the body says, you know what, I'm not listening to you anymore, soul. I'm going to take a day off. You tell me to move, I'm not going to move.
Right.
Your body doesn't do that. It doesn't have that option. Okay, there are various malaise that do affect such
communication.
Right. Okay, did I mention last week about my mother? I wanted to go visit my mother.
Mm-hmm.
About her moving her foot. Did I mention that?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So you understand that the... that if the body parts, the limbs, the legs, arms, etc., are an expression of what you want. Why did I just go like this? Because I wanted to, because somehow it fits into what's going to make me a better person. Like if I have an itch and I scratch it, okay, that's gross motor skill.
Mm.
But it's only because I can only do that because my body is so totally, completely interconnected with my soul. So that when we do a mitzvah, now let's talk about the exemplified. The mitzvah, he said before in chapter 4, is like the physical object. It's like the body of Hashem. Or he calls them the robes of the king. Mm-hmm. And what's the king then? Is the chayis, which is enclosed in it. If you want to grab the chayis, you can't sit on the floor with your legs crossed and put yourself into whatever and start grabbing onto malachim, onto angels. It's not going to happen. You can't get there from here. What you can do, though, is throw a nickel in a charity box. What you're doing then is grasping on the essence of Hashem. Let's look for a place to stop there. Like, for example, as soon as a person decides, you know what, I want to stretch out my hand, a ragler or his foot, the soul moves. Doesn't have to tell it to.
Right.
You don't have to say move. Because if you had to do that, you'd have to probably say every 3 seconds, breathe.
Exactly, every four.
Inhale, 1.5 seconds, outhale,
yeah.
1.5 seconds.
Yeah.
Okay, so all these things are going on that you're not even thinking about. Mm-hmm.
Stomach digest.
Yep.
Blah, blah, blah.
But he says an interesting thing. As soon as a person decides they're going to stick out their hand, so they stick out their hand. Medical science explains this, that there is neurological function in the brain, specifically the back part of the brain, which controls motion. I take that back. So where, what part of the brain it is. Okay. They say, science will tell you, that nerve impulses travel from the brain to the foot at 200 miles an hour. Mm-hmm. You ever heard of such a statistic?
No, I haven't heard
of
this one.
So now you have your 6-foot man.
Mm.
How long will it take a nerve impulse traveling 200 miles an hour to go 6 feet?
6 feet.
Really small.
Yeah.
Okay, so you can say that it's like not noticeable. There doesn't have to like what he's been meaning over here. Is it's not something that is noticeable that it takes time.
Right.
Okay, so it takes 3/4 of a second for the impulse to to convey itself to that body part, but that still conveys time. It doesn't. That's not what he means over here. Okay, he's not arguing with that per se. Mm-hmm. That may be all very well and good. Mm-hmm. Okay. The Einstein lived around the time of Newton. No, Newton lived way before.
Yeah, way before.
Way before.
Yeah.
Okay, but physics was based at that point on Newtonian theory.
Right, correct.
Okay, and it stayed that way until Einstein came up with relativity, and then the others, those other wonderful people came up with quantum mechanics, etc.
Correct, yeah.
Okay, so the... the Alter Rebbe defines time... like Einstein.
Mm.
Okay, I don't know if people picked up on it when Einstein came up with his theory or how what it is, because Newton defines time as a continuum. You've got this like timeline. Right. You want to be here and eventually you're going to wind up over there. And so there's all the things that happened, and you couldn't be at point B unless point A happened. Comes along Newton with the theory of relativity, and the people who did quantum mechanics have said, no, that's not necessarily true. And what defines time? Time is noticeable change. So when the Alter Rebbe says, and there's other places where the Alter Rebbe uses the definition of time according to Einstein rather than according to Darwin, he says that when we say that as soon as you want to move your foot, you move your foot without thinking and without any delay in time. It's not that it's not taking no time, okay? So it's taking 0.05 whatever fifths of a second. It's saying it's ki'ilu. It doesn't say ki'ilu as though it's not taking any time because it's such a small amount of time. It's not. It says it's not taking up time because time is change.
Right.
To go from the brain to the foot, there is no change in the characteristic of the nerve impulse. It's basically the same. Did it take a period of time to go from the 6 feet to 200 miles an hour? Yes. But it still remains the same thing. The reason why you can move your little toe is because of something, and everybody's sitting at the table moving their little toes now, yes. The reason why you can move your little toe is because something in the back of your brain said, oh, 6 feet away, there's a toe, and I would like it to wiggle now.
Hmm.
Okay, and you're not even aware that you're doing this, because if you were, you wouldn't be able to do anything else.
Huh. Right.
Okay. Mikovakal, ki miyad she'ela b'ratzayin shalom l'shut yado el raglev hein nishmas l'ratzayin ha'tegev v'miyad. That's why it says it happens immediately, as soon as you want to move your hand. B'li shum tziva avamira lehem. You don't have to talk to him and say, hey, you, move.
Right.
And he's talking to you about your feet. Ela kerege mamash kishe'ela b'ratzayinai. But only as soon as a person wants to, immediately he's moving his hand.
Right.
or his foot, as the case may be. I think you wanted to stop now, right, Akiva? So we will stop here, and we're on the third line of page 96.